your home of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.
Find the trailer shot. Score!
Listening to The Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McElligan. This is your inside perspective on the NHL, players, the Blue Jackets, and more.
Brought to you by Nationwide, AEP, and Ohio Health. March with us.
Here's former Jacket Jody Shelley and the voice of the Jackets, Bob McElligan.
Welcome to The Inside Edge. Bob McElligan and Jody Shelley with you, the Blue Jackets. Coming into a day where they went back to practice after losing to the Washington Capitals last night 6-3. Jody, we talked about this after the game last evening, but the Washington Capitals, you just won two games in a row against the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Colorado Avalanche, but when you face Washington, it's a team that you can ill afford to make any mistakes against. The Blue Jackets made a couple, and they had to pay for them right away, and that's really the difference in the game. Just a few mistakes that were exploited.
Well, and if you remember last year, I don't know why this game sticks out, but it was the St. Louis Blues, an elite team last year. The Blue Jackets played, I think it was 58 and a half minutes of great hockey, two quick mistakes, and St. Louis then had the game in control, and they went on to win. And it's similar with Washington. You've got to be perfect every single shift. And if you go back to that 3-on-2 with Oshie, Backstrom, and Ovechkin last night, not much room. If you look at that on video, there's not a lot of room for passes or shots to be taken, but they find it. They're creative enough to do it. And yeah, you cannot give them a quarter of an inch because those guys are so dynamic. And when you're winning, you have some confidence. It's like when you're winning and winning and winning, you go into periods. Like I'm sure they came into the second period last night saying, all right, boys, let's turn the heat up a little bit in here. And that's what they did. You know, when I was playing for the San Jose Sharks and we were so successful, we went on to win the President's Trophy one year. It was crazy how that winning and that confidence just carried you through. And you had so much confidence in the next line that's going over the boards that you would almost create or cause the other team to get a little bit shaky and make those plays they don't want to make. And then you get those opportunities. A couple ones last night are glaring. And those are the difference in the hockey game.
And you talk about that first goal that they got. The Blue Jackets are up 1-0. They score the first goal. Kirby Reichel gets his first NHL goal. It's a great feel-good moment. Plus, you're dictating the way the game is played at that point. And then it changes with that goal by Nicklas Backstrom. But I did feel bad for Dalton Proud. He's trying to make a play on the boards, and he knows what line is out there against him. And really give credit to Braden Holtby, the goaltender for the Washington Capitals. Don't forget, he's the guy that played that puck. He's the one that threw it up on the glass and forced Dalton Proud to react. And once Dalton cannot hold that puck at the point, it's off to the races.
Well, great. Yeah, that's an excellent observation by you. And that play can happen 10 times, and it won't happen the way that it happened last night 9 times. You know what I mean? It's one of those situations where the bounce was perfect, the timing wasn't perfect by Dalton, and then the odd man rush occurs from that situation. If you're going to talk about that, I feel bad for Justin Falk. He's a kid that's been in the minor leagues up in Lake Erie, and he gets an opportunity here. He gets an opportunity when there was 9 defensemen here. Now he's down, and he gets in the lineup. And from his knees, he tries to force something. And listen, when you're on the ice and you see something, you like to see a kid have the confidence, and he's not a kid, he's mid-20s, to make that play, to at least try it. I don't mind guys trying things, but when you're playing against the Capitals, maybe wait. Maybe not try it in that on your knee when you think something is there, because it's a half a second. When you see an opportunity, it changes in half a second. So when you're on your knee trying to make that play, it causes a turnover in the defensive zone. Of course they score on it. And, those are two mistakes that really turn the tides of the game.
And unfortunately, we'll stay on Justin Falk for a moment because he makes the next mistake. It was an inadvertent high stick. He wasn't trying to high stick a guy in the face, but he does, and he draws blood, and it's 4 minutes worth of power play. And all day, everybody was saying, you can't let this team go on the power play. They're the second best in the league. I don't know how the heck they're not the first in the league on the power play with the way they do it. They scored 2 times on that double minor. And for Justin Falk, this is the first time that we've really talked about him in a couple of weeks. And that's a compliment, because when you're a defensive defenseman, if nobody's mentioning your name, you're doing your job night in and night out. And you mentioned he was with the Lake Erie Monsters, and what a great run this has been for him to come up, get into the lineup. I mean, Kevin Connaughton is gone. He was lost on waivers. Justin Falk is not only still here, but playing in games. It'll be interesting to me to see tomorrow if John Tortorella bails on him and scratches him and puts Vetter Tootin back in his place, or if he lets him take a mulligan based on his total body of work here and playing the game against the Calgary Flames.
What I think is that Torts is going to scratch him because I just think that it's a learning opportunity. He knows what he's got in this kid. Justin Falk is meat and potatoes, big body player. He had a fight last night in a situation which I thought was fantastic. He went after a skilled player. I think it was Kuznetsov behind the net. And in comes Michael Latta to his defense, and Justin Falk took a couple punches. But, hey, who cares? You know, and he's willing to do whatever. And I think that Torts will take this opportunity to get the veteran Tootin back in the lineup, sit Falk to watch a game or two, knowing that you'll get back in this lineup. And he did it with Golubev. And he's going to do it with Falk. He did it with Scott Hartnell on a bad penalty. Not that Falk was a bad penalty, but a couple slip-ups last night. So I think you see the tendencies of John Tortorella here. Now, I'm not saying maybe it won't happen, but my gut tells me that that's the way this is going to get played out.
Well, I want to ask you about the Washington Capitals before we move on here and whether or not this team has what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. They are the best in the NHL right now. And I talked to Jason Chimera about this yesterday, and I asked him, do you have a team here to win the Stanley Cup? And he hesitated for a moment, and he said, I hope so. But he also made a great point that the playoffs are such a different thing than the regular season is. But when you watch this team, the way they play, John Tortorella, I thought, made a great point yesterday morning when he said that for all the times that he has coached a team against Washington, he sees them now playing as a unit, not as a collection of individuals, which they had done under previous coaches, but Barry Trotz has them bought in buying or playing as a team. And then when you see them go out and add a guy like Mike Richards to play in the fourth line, for crying out loud, a guy that once upon a time was a top-line centerman, they're asking him to come in and play a reduced role and just give them more stability. Based on what you saw last night and based on the players, and you know you played with some of them, you played against them, does that team have what it takes to win the whole thing?
Yeah, and I like Justin Williams. I think they do. I think their goaltending with those veterans, Williams, Richards now, who have won multiple Stanley Cups, there's something about that in the locker room that really, really brings it together. I mean, listen, and you're right, playoffs are wild. I mean, and the hesitation by Chimera, it's so funny. You got two different teams and two totally different opposite ends of the scale. You got the best and the worst. And we look at them with so much respect and think they've got so much going for them, but they are still unsure. And those teams that like you look at Montreal and New York, and that's why they have that hesitation, because any day things could turn on a dime. And for the Washington Capitals, they've faced no adversity this year. And they've only lost 8 games out of 45. And sometimes it's good to, and I'll go back to the San Jose days, we won. And sometimes we didn't win the right way, and I think maybe this was where the value of Barry Trotz will come in. He can identify the exact way, and this is where his job gets tough. When you're winning and you have to correct things, that's where Barry Trotz is going to earn his money because, hey, boys, you won 5-2 or whatever against, just for example, you won 5-2. I'm not saying last night. Last night was 6-3. You won 5-2, but you did it the wrong way. It's hard for a player to hear that from a coach, so I think they have what it takes, but boy, I'll tell you what, in a 7-game series, you can identify their weaknesses and go after them. And then if they have adversity the first 2 games, all bets are off because they haven't faced it all year. So it's an interesting animal, but right now where we sit, of course, in 30th, yeah, we think that they've got what it takes to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and to me, it's not even Alex Ovechkin. When I look at the Washington Capitals, I'm not just saying, well, they've got Ovechkin, because I'll be honest with you, I have long said I don't know that a team with Alex Ovechkin on it is going to win the Stanley Cup, and that goes back to that bit of selfishness stuff that John Tortorella said has been eliminated from this team. But to me, the guy that is the key, as it always is on any team that's going to win, is Braden Holtby. What a turnaround for this guy in the last 2 years. You know, he was the up-and-coming guy, and then he got way off track 3 years ago. Mitch Korn comes in with Barry Trotz. They let him go back to doing what he does. Last year he was very good, much improved, back in the right direction. But this year, he's been basically lights out. And I really thought last night there were a lot of rebounds that he gave up, but his teammates did a really good job of cleaning up in front of him.
Well, yeah, he's part of a system now, and his confidence gives the players in front of him confidence. And he's 26. I can't believe that. He's a young guy that couldn't play in this league. That was their biggest hole. And he found his game, rounded it up, and he is solid back there in conversation for the Vezina Trophy. I mean, that's the type of value that he has. So it's interesting when you look at a good goaltender, you look at their defense and the system they play, and Barry Trotz has always had great defensemen. He's always had a great goaltender, but he's always had a solid system. So here, I don't know if his – I believe that the swagger from the goaltender, it's a circle. His swagger gives the players in front of him swagger, and their system gives him the confidence too.
Well, that's a great point. And, you know, you mentioned Barry Trotz when he was in Nashville. You're right. It all started with the goaltending. Way back when Thomas Vokoun was the number one guy there, move on to Pekka Rinne being the number one guy, and he had that great defense and Shea Weber and Ryan Suter and all that cast of characters. But one thing he never had there was a sniper up front like Alex Ovechkin. And then when you put TJ Oshie and Nicklas Backstrom into the mix, he never had anything like that in Nashville.
Scary. And when you look at Vokoun, were you ever sold that he was that good of a goaltender? No, but the system and the players in front of him, the way they played, made him a confident guy that had to do just what he had to do to get to have that success. Now, they've only been, I don't know if they've gone further than the first round of the playoffs ever. They're that team that doesn't sustain pressure, Nashville, right? But it's so interesting to see what Barry Trotz and really what a coach can do after a few years of implementing. Ovechkin, he's completely different. He was one guy, and you said it, a bunch of parts. You said, Tort said it yesterday, a bunch of moving parts that weren't playing together. Now, it's a scary machine that waits for opportunities. Because remember, they used to force things, and it was a turnover. It was almost like a turnover factory in the offensive zone for Ovechkin. So, yeah, I like the way they're built and the way they play.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, we were talking about Alex Ovechkin and all the goals he had, and he was still one of the leading minus guys in the league, which means he doesn't play a two-way game. His game is much more solid now. What did he get, his 28th goal of the year last night? Doesn't even have 30, and here we are 45, 46 games in for that team. Doesn't have 30, but it really doesn't look like he cares. It looks like he's more concerned about them finding a way to win, not about him getting his points. And that's, you know what, when you want players to mature and you want them to come around, and I just wonder if he's in that stage of his career right now.
Plus 19 this year. And shorter shifts, doesn't stay out, and that's when he would get in trouble. He would stay out in the defensive zone and hope, not really help, hope that the puck would come Washington's way, and then he would spring for his cookies, we'll call them, his goals, points. None of that anymore. He would come off the ice. He would dump the puck. There was things last night he would do that was like, wow, he's really bought into this system.
Yeah. And they are dangerous, very, very dangerous, no question. Coming up next, we were just talking about Barry Trotz when he was in Nashville and having great defensemen. Well, one of those great Nashville defensemen is now here, Seth Jones, coming over, and I want to talk about how he is progressing. I know it's only been a couple of games, but he's made a noticeable impact. We'll talk about that next as the Inside Edge continues on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. I'm Bob McElligott, joined by Jody Shelley. Seth Jones has been here. How long has he been here now? What, 2 weeks almost?
Yeah, something like that. He got here, his first game was against the Carolina Hurricanes. So, yeah, a couple weeks.
And Seth Jones has made an immediate impact for the Blue Jackets. And you can just see him getting more and more comfortable with each and every game that he plays. And what have been your impressions from seeing him? Because you've watched him both from up top in the press box and you've seen him from ice level between the benches. What are your early reviews on Seth Jones?
Okay, he got here January 8th, so it'll be 2 weeks this Friday. And my impressions are he's confident, he's calm, and he's smart. And I think to really get a sense on him, he talked to the guy he's playing with, Ryan Murray, and Ryan Murray has a huge smile on his face before he talks about him because he's never played with a defenseman of that caliber. No disrespect to anyone he's ever played with, but he raves about his speed, how he's up in the play, how his partner Seth Jones is up in the play, and how he can fly back and cover up when Ryan thinks he's in a situation where he's by himself back there. All of a sudden, Seth Jones is back and helping him. And he's so impressed with how he gets out of trouble. So a couple situations that Seth gets into, Ryan thinks he's got to go in and help, but he stays out. Seth makes a smart play, and Ryan Murray is impressed. So when your line mates or the people you play with are impressed with your skill and how you play the game, that's the biggest compliment you can get. So just from watching him, his speed, his size, and his confidence for me.
What I have noticed, too, with Ryan Murray, all those things that you talked about, but also his game, to me, has changed a little bit. It is more aggressive. He is getting up on the play. We've seen him have an assist and a goal in the last couple of games. And this guy is not necessarily an offensive defenseman. He's a guy that's known for his responsibility on the blue line. But all of a sudden, with that partnership with Seth Jones, it looks like he's not afraid to go up the ice. He's not afraid to lose the puck if something that he wasn't thinking was going to happen happens, because Seth has his back.
It's really something when you have trust with a player, a line mate or a player, and you know that you can worry about your game and you don't have to worry about what your partner or line mate is going to do that might cost you an opportunity or give up an opportunity to the other team. So I know, or Murray knows, that Seth Jones is not going to leave him hanging out to dry or let him down with a bonehead play, and that gives Ryan that sense of being able to stay within himself, and really, I think it's a level of comfort now with Ryan, and comfort means confidence, and especially as a defenseman, there's situations when they go back for pucks or when they need to find outlets or they're really got no opportunities and they create stuff because they're that smart back there on the back end. When you have a partner that's on the same page and is actually – it's almost like Seth has drug Ryan Murray into a new level of the game. And I think that's exciting for Ryan Murray. It just seems like he is in a good, good place right now.
When Seth Jones first came in here, one of the things John Tortorella talked about with him needing to make adjustments was Nashville plays a man-to-man style of defense. The Blue Jackets play a zone-style defense. He's made those adjustments. But when you're playing a zone like that and you're that big and you cover that much ice, how much better could that make him, or how much easier is it, I should say, for him to adapt just because of his frame alone to covering the space he needs to in a zone?
Well, that's the thing, too. He's 21, and he's only going to grow into that frame, but you can tell that he's coordinated and he's athletic. His anticipation is something else. But yeah, when you have a wingspan like that and you don't have, you can be efficient, especially a guy that plays big minutes. They defend very well, and you notice those two guys have not spent too much time in the defensive zone, which allows them to have some fun halfway through a shift and get into the offensive zone. Has to do with his size and his ability to jump and his chemistry with Ryan Murray. That's a great point by you, that wingspan. It takes away and it surprises players with the pucks when you think you have 3 feet or 2 feet to make a move and then go around the player. But Seth Jones immediately takes away with that long reach, and it's a real strong tool to have.
Tell me if you think I'm wrong on this. When I watch him play, and when I talk to him and listen to what he says, I get the full impression that this guy wants to be the best. Not one game, not two games, every minute, every shift, every night. That's the way he comes across to me. Am I wrong?
No, I agree. I haven't spent a lot of time talking to him, but there is an air about him that is you get the sense of an upper echelon. He's got a good way about him. He knows how he to carry himself, and there's a confidence in his ability. And it comes from within, and I think it comes from being around the players that he was around in Nashville and the success he's had there. The name that I think of is one of the most respected and the best, one of the best leaders in the game is Shea Weber. And it sounds like he really took him under his wing. And I bet you that the stuff and the intangibles that Seth Jones learned from Shea Weber, not from talking to him, but from watching him on a daily basis, has probably led to this kid being such a confident, poised, and he's got some leadership qualities exactly the way you say, because guys are watching him right now.
Yeah. And he did say when he first got here, he lived with Shea Weber for a short period of time when he first got to Nashville. So, yes, watching the example, but also watching how he lived his life. And that – we forget about this all the time, don't we? I mean, these are people, everybody, there are still things that everybody has in common with one another because we're all people, and you can learn so many things both on and off the ice. And it does appear, whether it's from Shea Weber, whether it's from his dad and the way that he grew up in the NBA, playing and being around the game, whatever, he's gotten that.
Yeah, well, think about that. You grow up, everyone goes up different ways, different lifestyles. NBA, I mean, that's a professional-level sport, obviously. He's got the inside track and what that's just his life growing up. That's just being a kid in his world. And then how often do you get to see a guy like Shea Weber and how he lives his life and realize that, hey, you know, this is just life. And he's just playing hockey, raising his kids, working out, taking care of himself, and to get that inside look, that's the value of that. And I love when organizations do that. Let those kids see from the veterans in organization how you live your life. It's not all about hockey. There's other things to it, and there's times to get away. And I think that I just said it a minute ago. I think the leadership value that he brings at 21, there's a huge ceiling, I'll put it that way. But there's some good parts of that kid that these young kids that are around him appreciate.
Speaking of veterans, we talked in the last segment about Justin Falk, whether or not he plays tomorrow night, we don't know, but you speculated he could be scratched, which would put the veteran Fetter Tootin back into the lineup. Scott Hartnell was also scratched for the game last night. He may or may not go back into the lineup. When you see guys like Fetter Tootin and Scott Hartnell getting scratched for whatever reason, whether it's the speed of the game, whether it's a bad decision you made in the game, doesn't matter. What kind of a message does that send? And as the veteran player that's waiting to get back in, how painstaking can that process be?
It can be really tough. And, I mean, Scotty Hartnell is a guy with a lot of pride, and so is Fetter Tootin. And they've established themselves in the National Hockey League as players that are constant in lineup. Just they're always there, and they always bring what they bring. Scotty's game is always on the edge and always walks that line. And John Tortorella, you credit him in a sense that he's consistent, and he did it with Johansson, and he's done it with Hartnell, and he's done it with Golubov, and he's, you know, the situation is rookie salary. It doesn't matter how many years, how long you've done it, and what you expect. It's what you've done today that has cost the group that you're going to pay the price for. So very painful for Scotty. He's got his family in town. He's a proud guy. He's proud that he's been around and experienced so much. And when he walks in the locker room, he knows that all the young guys are watching him. So, you know, it hurts him quite a bit to have to sit out and watch a game and not be a part of the group and then have to show up the next day and, you know, kind of earn your stripes back a little bit. It'll be good for Scotty in the second half of his career here. Well, I shouldn't say second half. The last third of his career, I should say. And But hopefully, you know, he can learn and be that leader that he's always been, and he needs to continue it on a daily basis. He knows that. And for Tootin, boy, I tell you what a professional guy. And he never saw this coming. And it's one of those things where you're not meeting a nicer guy in the National Hockey League than Fetter Tootin, a guy that battles, works. He's a great teammate, such a positive attitude. He'll be back in there too. But it's got to be tough when you go home and your neighbors and your kids – friends and everybody around you, because the majority of the time now, you know, when you're not at the rink, you're around and your wife and your mom. So there's that dynamic too, which makes it even more, it's hard on the ego, and it's tough to swallow, but once you get past that, you turn that into a positive.
Speaking of neighbors and friends and all those kind of things, one thing that people say to me is, well, as you're looking to make deals by the trade deadline, let's take those two guys in particular. They have value. They're older guys. They're veterans. They know how to play the game. Playoff performer in Scott Hartnell. He's been that before. Maybe he draws some interest. They say, are you hurting their value by healthy scratching those guys? Now, the same people said this to me about Ryan Johansson. They got pretty good value back for Ryan Johansson, I would say, in Seth Jones. But does it hurt at all?
I don't think so. I think those guys, they are what they are. Scotty Hartnell was leading this team in scoring, or tied for it with Boone till last night. The one thing is they've been around long enough that you know what they are. And the other thing is the only question with older players, can they still play? Well, these guys can play. So, and we've seen it up to this year. So, no, if they sit out a few games, it just means that they're not included in that moment, that night of what Torts is going through. And I don't see that hurting any value at all.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to get together with J.D. Kershaw. He is the Blue Jackets Vice President of Marketing. Winter Park is opening on Friday. You get a chance to skate outdoors downtown again this year. We'll tell you all about it next as the Inside Edge continues on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. I'm Bob McElligott, joined by Jody Shelley, and right now we are with Blue Jackets Vice President of Marketing, J.D. Kershaw. The Winter Park is getting ready to open again this year. It's something that was experienced during the All-Star festivities last year with the outdoor rink. And J.D., what made the Blue Jackets decide to bring this back again this year?
I think it was very successful last year. People seemed to really enjoy it. And, you know, we did it not only for the hockey community, but the community at large. And we really saw a lot of people come down and take advantage of it. And we simply wanted to do it again as a good community gesture.
Yeah, there's just something about going out there and having a skate like late in the afternoon or in the evening in downtown, outside. And last year it was picture perfect. There was a lot of snow throughout the course of the couple of days it was there. And so I guess the feedback was great.
Yeah, you know, and it's such a unique setting, you know, in the middle of downtown and what we have here. And as I said earlier, you know, it's not just the hockey community that took advantage of it. It's the community at large. And, you know, whether you're a hockey fan or not, it's a lot of fun to come down with your kids or your, you know, your husband, your wife, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, whatever it is. And, you know, do a little public skating, have some hot chocolate, some popcorn, maybe cook some s'mores over the open fire. It's just a good time.
Not a lot of games out there, but I know the guy next to me did play a little bit on that outdoor rink.
It was awesome. I'm telling you, there's nothing like, I don't know if maybe some of our listeners haven't experienced skating outside. It's magical. And it's so cold. There's not many things you're going to do outside. I mean, you can try to go for a walk. You can try to run, but it's usually too cold. And who wants to put their stuff on to run? But an outdoor activity that's fun, just like skiing, you know, when you ski all day, it's just, there's an excitement to it. Skating outdoors, outdoor hockey, whatever you can do out on the ice, it's fascinating. My question, JD, my first question is, how did you tie this in with minor hockey here in this local community?
So what we did was we gave each association an opportunity to purchase, you know, ice time, however they want to utilize it. That was up to them. So each association was given an opportunity to buy a certain amount of ice time. Some of them took full advantage of what they were offered, and some just took you know, a certain few hours. And again, how they utilize it, whether they want to do simple public skating for their association or use it for team practices, they're all using it in different ways. But again, quite honestly, the majority of ice time goes to public skating so that the community can really take advantage of it.
Why is there no slide this year down Nationwide Boulevard?
Oh, that is a tough question. There was a lot that went into that, and there was a lot of people that made that happen. And I think from the hoops we had to jump through and the costs associated with it, and all things considered, it's just too difficult to do on an annual basis. It was great for the All-Star game. Perhaps if we have another big event like that in the future, we would look at it, but on an annual basis, just too many hoops to jump through.
You had to truck a little bit of snow in for that, didn't you?
Yes. The night before we opened up, we didn't have enough snow, so we brought some snow in from Mad River, and you know, that in and of itself, trucking it in and stuff is quite an adventure. So as I said, a lot of hoops to jump through there.
You ever done that before, Jody? Did you ever have to go get snow and bring it somewhere? Usually, you're trying to ship it out.
I'm trying to think. You know what? I don't think I've ever shipped snow in from anywhere. And I've lived in Canada, so has JD, but yeah, that's probably a first for a Canadian, JD, shipping in snow.
Yeah, I absolutely was not prepared for that, but you know what? It all worked out great. So we're real excited, and we're going to try and do this you know, as long as everything goes well. We're going to try and do this for the next 5 years.
What are you going to have over there besides the rink? Anything besides the rink?
There's a hospitality tent again, not quite to the size that we did last year, but hospitality tent where we'll have bands and DJs on the weekend, and you know, where you can get some concessions and stuff, but just not quite to the level that we had last year.
Well, one of the ways that it's kind of going to get kicked off, because it all opens on Friday, by the way, and it's in McPherson Commons right across the street from Nationwide Arena, but the Blue Jackets are actually going to get out on the ice and have a practice early on Friday before heading off to Boston. When you were playing, did you ever do an outdoor practice?
You know what? I did.
You were part of a Winter Classic where your team played classic. One.
Yeah, we did that outdoor in the stadium practice. That was a healthy scratch for the game, unfortunately. That's another show. But we practiced in New York City in Harlem. There's a rink in the north side of the park there, and amazing. I was with the Philadelphia Flyers, and you're going on the ice as an NHL player as public skate is ending, which is really neat too. And it was during that HBO 24/7 series. There's just something different. There's something different, and we talked to Torts. Torts just talked about it today. This team needs a change right now, and he said this is different, and he's embracing it because it just brings you back to what how hockey started outdoors. And if you ever watch the 24/7, that's all those guys talk about is when there were kids playing that hockey game outside. So awesome thing that you guys are doing, JD, here downtown, and exciting that you can do it for the next 5 years.
Was that a hard sell to get the team to go over there and practice outside?
Not at all. As Jody said, Coach Tortorella was all for it. It was a simple ask, and it's a great way to kind of kick the rink off. They're going to practice at 11 o'clock on Friday, and then immediately following, we'll have some. We may need to do a little ice maintenance, but immediately following, we'll start with public sessions and go from there. But it was not a hard sell at all. I mean, he was right into it, and I think, as Jody said, I think the guys are going to have a blast.
Yeah, and your guy, you grew up playing the game. It's just different like that, right? To go out and have a good time. Maybe you have to put on a little bit of extra gear if it's cold outside and protect the face. But other than that, it should be like a bunch of 8-year-old kids out there on Friday, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it's like Jody said. I mean, I think it brings you back to where you came from. I think a lot of us grew up playing on outdoor rinks, whether they're ponds or actually, your parents made a rink in the backyard or whatever. And you can't help but bring back those memories and all the fun times you had skating outdoors with your buddies for hours and hours and hours. So, yeah, I think the guys are going to have a great time.
And you don't have to dig the puck out of a snowbank or anything because there's just boards there.
That is true. That is true. No snowbanks to deal with, yeah. And there's even a Zamboni.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And, Bob, I just looked at the weather. It opens Friday, Saturday, sunny and 32, and Sunday, sunny and 34. Like, you can't get better days. You're going to be in T-shirts out there because after a few laps, I'm telling you, you start to get a little sweat on. You're like, boy, it's actually hot out here. And the next thing, you're flying around the buildings downtown with a T-shirt on. Or in your case, maybe no shirt on.
Yeah, right. I would still make the recommendation, bring a jacket, because the weather does tend to change at any point in time. But, JD, what are the for people that are interested and they want to come down and they want to skate, what information do they have to know, or where can they find information about the public sessions and when they can be here?
The best place to go is to bluejackets.com/winterpark, because there you'll see all the information, all the public session times. If there's people out there that are interested in doing private rentals, you can get the phone number and information there as well. So it's all the information there is there. So again, bluejackets.com/winterpark. And a big thanks to Worthington Industries for being the presenting partner of Winter Park, along with some assistance from Ohio Health. We greatly appreciate it.
And so if there is a company that would like to call and actually rent the ice for a time and have their employees come out, that's available to do as well?
Yes. Again, just go to bluejackets.com/winterpark and all that information there, the phone number, kind of, the basics of it, but all that information is on the website.
All right, Winter Park is opening on Friday. Blue Jackets will kick it off with a practice at 11 o'clock in the morning. If you want to come down and watch practice and then get on the ice, what a great day to spend a Friday. What a great excuse to do nothing on Friday except watch the Blue Jackets and have a skate. Stay tuned. Thanks to J.D. Kershaw, the Vice President of Marketing for the Blue Jackets. Stay tuned. Jody and I will come back and wrap up tonight's edition of The Inside Edge on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to The Inside Edge. Getting ready to close out tonight's show. I'm Bob McElligott alongside of Jody Shelley. Let's take a look at some of the things going on in the hockey world right now. Next week, it's going to be the All-Star Game, or the 3-on-3 tournament is actually what it is. But the All-Star festivities are going to be taking place in Nashville. And there's been a lot of talk about this game because of who was going to be in it and then not going to be in it. And then be in it again. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the show. We brushed on it when the voting started, the fan voting open. John Scott, enforcer, he was with the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, he's been around hockey a long time. He's been in and out of the National Hockey League. He has more penalty minutes than he has points by far, obviously. But he got voted to be the captain of the Pacific Division All-Star team. He was voted by the fans. That you could vote for the captains. You could vote for anybody. There were no limits. The fans voted him in, and he was all ready to go. Then he got traded from the Arizona Coyotes to the Montreal Canadiens and immediately got assigned to the American Hockey League. The league came out, and they said, well, he's not going to play. And then there was backlash from the fans, and the hashtag Free John Scott popped up over all over Twitter, all over Instagram, and people felt like the league was just saying, we don't care what your votes are. We don't care what your voice is. You don't have a voice. We're going to take it away from you. So just this week, it got fixed. John Scott will play in the All-Star game. He will captain the Pacific Division team. There was a precedent. Sandis Ojalinc years ago had been traded from one conference to the other and still was able to represent his old conference in the All-Star game. It's not a big deal, the All-Star game. It's fun, but, you know, well, there is a chance to win money this year in this tournament. But what are your feelings on this for John Scott, who when he admitted when it started out, he didn't think anything of it. But as the votes kept coming and coming, he was not going to go. And then all of a sudden his family's saying, hey, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You were a guy in that role. You were an enforcer in this league. What are your feelings on this? And, man, can you put yourself in John Scott's skates?
I kind of can, because when I was in Philly in 2011, there was some kind of campaign that went out and voted me. I think it was I was 28th in popular votes with, I don't know, 50 or 68,000 votes. So it didn't mean anything, but I can. I mean, I felt awkward when these people were doing this, because, you know, it was kind of like, okay, I know why you're doing it. I mean, sure, you like what I do. But and you're fans of fighting and my game, but come on, it's the All-Star game. But then if you get voted in as a captain, why not? I mean, I think it's a great thing for John Scott. I mean, go to the game. It'll be fun to watch. It's an All-Star game. I mean, come on. It's like Crosby's been the one. I mean, he's the All-Star. It's not like you got a truck of the top 30 players in the National Hockey League, the elite of the elite. You know, there's guys that are injured. There's guys that are nicked up. There's guys that aren't going to go because of different reasons. And it makes it different. The NHL is always looking for something, and they do a great job. The vote was made. John Scott's going to go. And, you know, I could see him feeling awkward at first and not wanting to go. But you said it, Bob, family. When the family gets involved and gets excited and gets in your ear, you look at things a little differently, not just from I guess the perspective of the popular vote, which I think hockey players and teammates and people in professional sports always do anyway. It's probably doing business too, where it's like, ooh, what are my peers going to think? Well, I think when your family gets involved, you look at it a little differently. Maybe a couple of his teammates encourage him too. So too bad he's not, you know, he's down in the American League. He's probably in a tough situation. But, boy, I'll tell you what, he's in for a very memorable weekend in Nashville as an All-Star.
Yeah, and it may be the last hurrah for him in the NHL. It very well could be. What is he, 33 years old? And he does have two young kids. His wife is pregnant with twins, and she is due as well. So, again, we talked about this when we were talking about Seth Jones earlier in the show. There is a people factor. And this is not a guy that has made a gazillion dollars as a pro hockey player. Yes, he's made money, but he hasn't made tons of money. And there is a chance to make some money as being part of this All-Star game this year. And, you know, that was one of the things that people were saying. How dare you take that opportunity away from him to make that money? And for all intents and purposes, everything that's been said about John Scott, and I don't know if you know him or how well you do, if you do, but everything that is said about him is he's a great character guy. And listen, you're a fine example. Enforcers are usually the meanest guys on the ice and the nicest guys off the ice. And the people in Buffalo rave about John Scott. And the people in Arizona rave about John Scott. So there is that people element too.
Well, thanks for the compliment, Bob. And, you know, I've talked to my former teammates in San Jose about him, and they love him. And, yeah, fine. Let's not overreact on this thing. It's a popular vote. Last year it was Girgensons from Buffalo. He had a country voting for him, and he got in. I mean, is he the elite All-Star? No, but it's a nice story. Let's not put a too big of a blemish on it, because there are people out there that are so against fighting, which is fine. Everyone has a stance, but John Scott got voted in as a captain. Let him go, and you know what's going to happen? whoever's on his team are going to embrace him, and they're going to have a fantastic time, and we're going to enjoy watching John Scott and what he does out there, and I think he'll do fine in the three-on-three. He knows his roles. He knows his limitations, and I'll bet he'll have every shift with a smile on his face.
If I was him, I'd go right to the front of the net. Big boys, stand in front of the net. Maybe you pick up a rebound or something in that. But you're right. It is all about fun, and to me, that's what's bothered me about the whole thing. It's this guy didn't get voted to represent a country in the World Cup tournament next fall. He got voted to the All-Star game. It's all about fun, and you're right. He'll be a star in Nashville, both on and off the ice. I think he will. All right, let's talk about another enforcer, this time Brian McGrattan, a guy that has been for years back and forth, AHL, NHL. He played in Calgary the last couple of years. Very unfortunate incident happened to him this week where he's playing in the AHL. He's playing in San Diego for the Anaheim Ducks affiliate there, and he was playing in San Antonio against the Colorado Avalanche affiliate, and he got knocked out. I mean, he got KO'd in a fight. This is a funny thing to me. Before we go further on this, as much as fighting is down in the National Hockey League, in the American Hockey League, it's still a big part of what goes on. It really is. I just saw a story today where they said that the San Diego Gulls have been really stocking up on the enforcer because – guess what? It sells tickets in the minor leagues. It still does. But for Brian McGrattan, I know you know him, and how bad do you feel for a guy that gets knocked out? I don't care what level it happens at when you get knocked out cold in the middle of a fight.
You know, you feel terrible. It's actually sad. It's disturbing to watch that. I mean, I can't watch MMA and that stuff because, I mean, that knockout thing is – it's hard to watch. And when the guy goes down like McGrattan did, I don't know if people saw the video, but he gets knocked out and then bounces off the ice. His face bounces off the ice. Horrific scene. And you know what? In the back of your mind, in every single fight that you have, as an enforcer in the National Hockey League, I became an enforcer at 18 because I wanted to make a team. I was a goal scorer. I was a point getter. McGrattan, same story. All these guys, we all have the same story. But we found a vehicle, a crack in the door to get us to the National Hockey League, and we jumped through it. And I rode it all the way, as did Brian. Now he finds himself in the American Hockey League. He's been 7 years sober. He battled substance abuse. He's got a nice little family, and he's playing in San Diego. But he knows the risk when dropping the gloves every single night. It just takes that one punch, it doesn't matter who you're fighting, to connect that can lay you out. Fortunately, I never got laid out. But I still hate seeing it. Seeing guys get knocked out like that, it bothers me. It bothers everybody, as it should. Brian McGrattan is, you know, he's come out and say he's not going to change his game. That's part of what he does. I mean, every time you drop the gloves, and I said this, you in the back of your mind hope that the lights don't go out on you. That's really what you hope. So right there, he got caught with a punch. And I'm not a boxing guy. I'm not an MMA guy. I don't live and breathe that stuff. I just did it when I worked, and it was a risk that we took. So no, you don't want to see it happen. It happens. It's, you don't see it very often anymore. That's why it just looks, I mean, the conversation about it this year is much different than it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago. It would be a highlight that we would all be putting opposition player on a pedestal for. But in this instance, we don't even know the last name, really, of the guy who laid out Brian McGrattan. It's just the reaction of McGrattan. Is he okay? And I like where that's evolved, because protection of the player, you know, should he play again? I mean, that's all conversations that need to be had right now, because there's real live things that happen, CTE and all those things that people talk about. So Brian has got to be smart. You don't want to see this happen. They're moving to getting these situations out of hockey. Crazy things happen in hockey games. There's things that you can't – there's skates, pucks, sticks. I think the league does a great job of controlling as much as they can, and I think they've done the same thing with the fighting, you know, freakish things, and I think this is one of those freakish things.
All right. Well, that's great insight on that. And, hey, can I just tell you, I'm glad that you were able to stop playing and move right into this and not have to continue to play in the minor leagues and put yourself in that kind of situation too. A lot of hungry guys in the minors looking to make a name for themselves, and that's kind of what happens here. All right, that's going to do it for tonight's edition of The Inside Edge. Tomorrow night, Blue Jackets hosting the Calgary Flames, 7 o'clock at Nationwide Arena. Until then, for Jody Shelley, I'm Bob McElligott, and this is 97.1 The Fan.
This has been The Inside. Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McGillicuddy.
And I got two words for you. Game over.
Brought to you by Nationwide, AEP, and Ohio Health. March with us.
On your flagship station for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.